Hello and welcome to this reflection from Stretton Vale Baptist Church, and Happy New Year. I pray that you may experience more of God's presence and love throughout 2026, and you are blessed and challenged by him as you go through the year. At the beginning of a new year, we often like to take time to reflect, to evaluate, to look back on things past and to plan for things in the future. And we'll be doing that together as we consider the question, why are you here? Why are you listening to this message? Why am I talking about this? Why do any of us care about church? What is the point of church? Is it just a social club? A place for people with similar interests to gather? Is it a support group where we share our struggles and trials? Is it a lecture where you listen to someone giving information about the Bible? Is it a book club where we study the Bible, one book forever? Over the next couple of months, up until the beginning of Lent, we will focus on an aspect of what the church is, including the famous metaphors used in the Bible about the church as the body of Christ, the bride of Christ, the family of God. For this week, we consider the idea that, or the fact that the church is Jesus' idea. Let me read from Matthew 16, 13 to 20. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." Jesus replied, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Then he ordered his disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. So the church is Jesus' idea. And the first thing to think about this is the fact that humans did not create the church by our own efforts. We do not receive credit for establishing the church. Instead, it has divine origins, and we receive it from God as a gift. In English, we use the word church, which is a shortening and a derivation of the Greek word kyriakon. This word literally translates as belonging to the Lord or of the Lord's. This shows us that church is not of human design or origin. It belongs to the Lord, to Jesus. In Matthew 16, Jesus questions his disciples about who people are saying he is. And then he asks them who they think he is. Once Peter announces that Jesus is the Christ, the Messiah, he then turns to Peter and says, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church." Jesus informed Peter that his understanding of Jesus' identity was not revealed by human means, but was a gift from God. And in a similar way, the church is built not through Peter or any other human, but it is revealed to us by God, established and created by God, given to us as a gift. Why is this important? Well, it's important because it means that the church is not my church or your church or even Stretton Vale Baptist Church. in general conversation, when we talk about church, we often say things like, my church is... And it's we use it as a shorthand to mean the church fellowship that I attend is. But it also shows the tendency of human nature to lay claim to things. And I know that I am just as guilty about speaking about my church. Perhaps we need to be a bit more mindful of our language so that we stop reinforcing this unconscious assumption that the church belongs to us. Because as the Greek word translates, the church belongs to the Lord. This tendency to try to take ownership is not new. In 1 Corinthians 3, Paul rebukes the Christians in Corinth for their possessiveness. People were identifying themselves not by Christ, but by human beings. Let me read from 1 Corinthians 3, starting at verse 3. You are still worldly, for since there is jealousy and quarrelling among you, are you not worldly? Are you not acting like mere humans? For when one says, I follow Paul, and another, I follow Apollos, are you not mere human beings? What, after all, is Apollos? And what is Paul? Only servants through whom you came to believe, as the Lord has assigned to each his task. I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God has been making it grow. So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. The one who plants and the one who waters have one purpose, and they will each be rewarded according to their own labour. For we are fellow workers in God's service. You are God's field, God's building. By the grace God has given me, I laid a foundation as a wise builder, and someone else is building on it. But each one should build with care, for no one can lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ. And then later on it says, from verse 18, do not deceive yourselves. If any of you think you are wise by the standards of this age, you should become fools, so that you may become wise. For the wisdom of the world is foolishness in God's sight. As it is written, he catches the wise in their craftiness. And again, the Lord knows that the thoughts of the wise are futile. So then, no more boasting about human leaders. All things are yours, whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas, or the world or life or death, or the present or the future. All are yours, and you are of Christ, and Christ is of God. Paul is scathing in his criticism of those who try to lay claim to the church. He fully acknowledges that his Jesus who established it. It is on Jesus that the foundations are laid. If we try to claim anything to the contrary, we are fools, acting worldly with jealousy. Instead, we need to fully acknowledge that Jesus established the church, and he is our foundation. It's not my church or your church, it's Jesus's church. So the second important thing to note is that because it is Jesus' idea, it is he who builds it. It is he who calls people to himself. This means that we do not have a say in who is in the church and who isn't. God and God alone knows who has accepted this invitation. In Matthew 16, verse 19, Jesus says something that seems quite strange and actually might seem to contradict what I've just said. He tells Peter, I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Now this might sound like Jesus is telling Peter that he is indeed the gatekeeper to membership in the church. But instead of seeing these keys to the kingdom of heaven as keeping people out, instead we should see it as the doors being opened. Peter stands in contrast to the scribes and the Pharisees and other people in the religious elite who shut off entrance to the kingdom. They had put so many rules, so many things that created barriers to reaching God. Peter's role, and therefore our role too, is to give people access to the kingdom by telling them about Jesus' love for them, explaining that he has freed us from our chains and welcomed us into his kingdom. We are gatekeepers of the church only insofar as we are responsible for telling people about God. But we are not to exclude people from accepting God's invitation just because they're different and not like us. If people are willing to declare Jesus as Lord and choose to follow him, they are part of the church. And yet, despite this, throughout history, people in the church have tried to act as gatekeepers, denying people welcome and belonging in the church. We can see so many examples of this throughout history. In 1517, Martin Luther King nailed his 95 theses to the... Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses to the door. And in this work, he argued for justification by faith alone, in an attempt to curtail some of the abuses in the Catholic Church. In 1521, Luther was excommunicated, which meant that he was excluded from the communion of believers, or in other words, kicked out of the church. And unfortunately, it is not just in the distant past that we can see this attempt by people to decide who can be in the church and who can't. In more recent history, churches in this country and all over the place would refuse welcome to people of Irish or Afro-Caribbean communities. And even today, we can still create an us and them atmosphere that makes some people feel unwelcome to be part of the church. But God is the one who builds the church. It is Jesus who invites people, anyone and everyone, by his death and resurrection. It is the Holy Spirit who speaks into people's hearts and brings transformation. God builds his church. And so who are we to try to exclude people for being different? The church has an open invitation to anyone who is willing to recognise Jesus as Lord and to follow him. The church is Jesus' idea, and the third thing I want to highlight about this is that the church is important to Jesus. It seems to be becoming quite a common occurrence to meet someone who calls themselves a Christian and yet who also believes that they don't need to be part of the church. They don't see the need to gather with other believers. I have a friend who I know because she used to attend one of the same church fellowships that I did. But something happened that caused her to fall out with some people in the church, and so she stopped attending church gatherings. And eventually, when I questioned her on it, she declared that she didn't need the church to be a Christian, that she was going to continue her faith outside of church settings. And I confess, I just felt sad for her because, yes, of course we can be Christians without meeting with fellow believers. After all, faith comes through belief in Jesus. But Jesus created the church because it is important to him. It's important to him because we grow and develop in our faith when we have others to journey along with us. As it says in Proverbs 27, verse 17, iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. We help each other in our faith to stay true to God and not wander or waver away from him when we speak about God with one another. It's so easy to get influenced by views from other places. But when we have fellow brothers and sisters who help us stay true to the faith, we are like iron sharpening iron. Also, we help support each other when times are tough. In Hebrews 10, verses 24 and 25, it says, "And let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching." The church is important because we spur each other on, and we help one another stay on the path. There are many things that either pull us away from following after God, such as the temptations and attractions of the world, or things that push us away from God, such as the difficulties and trials we experience. If we try to walk this path of faith alone, it becomes much easier to be either pulled by temptation or pushed by difficulty, and then we no longer follow Jesus. But when we hold each other up, the forces that push and pull have to contend with the strength of not just one person, but a whole church. Without the love and support that I have found in the church, I probably wouldn't still be following God, because it would have been too easy to be tempted or weighed down by the things of the world. Having faithful Christian brothers and sisters certainly helped to keep me focused on following God. And I know it helps others too. So why are we here? Well, at least one answer to that question is that we are here because the church is Jesus's idea. He established it. He invited us to be part of it, and he tells us that it is important.